Good morning. We'll call the committee to order. This is the meeting of the Veterans Affairs Division, and I don't have a gavel today, so we'll have to wing it without it. We need to approve the minutes from March 9th.
Mr. Chair, I will go ahead and move that we approve the minutes from the March 9th meeting.
All right. Representative Bigham moves the March 9th minutes. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Okay, we have one bill on the agenda today, House File 1891. Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much, Committee Chair and committee members. House File 1891 is an agency bill, and Mr. Clary has written a very nice summary for that bill. Let me just kind of read it into record here. Membership on the board directs that the chair of the Veterans Home Board must be a veteran, and at least 5 of the 9 voting members of the board must be persons experienced in policy formulation with professional experience in healthcare delivery. Under current law, it is not required that the chair be a veteran, and it is required that exactly 5 of the 9 board members must be healthcare professionals. Thus, this provision allows for, but does not guarantee, an increase in the representation of both veterans and healthcare professionals on the board. Executive Director adds language essential stating that the preference is that the Executive Director of the Veterans Home Board be a veteran, but that is not required Now, when this bill was put together, and I think the bill has been being worked on for a year, they had pretty good consensus. But we have now had some latent concerns and phone calls, and I think this makes a good committee to air those out at. I have expert witnesses here today, and they are going to give us a background and their opinions on this. And then also you have a very important document at your desk illustrating that latent and strong concern, which is important to me because we're here to service veterans and to make the very best of policy around. And the people that were in consensus, like the agencies and the governor, would be very want to know about this concern. So maybe when we're talking about this, maybe the way to go is to move this forward with this information going back to the agency and to the governor and saying, do you know we now have a concern? Should we be at the table? Should this go in the waste paper basket? Or what would you like to do? With that, I would like to introduce my witnesses. Will you just introduce yourself, maybe? And
Representative Hawes, thank you. Before we go to that, I like what you had to say, but would you like to move the bill?
I would like to move House File 1891.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
And I was reluctant to even do that.
Thank you, Representative Hawes. Okay, welcome to the committee, all 3 of you who will be testifying. And before you speak, please introduce yourselves and give your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. You know, and I think at the heart of the matter with this bill, and the department supports it, has worked with the veterans organizations and the Homes Board and the governor's office. What we're trying to do is set the veterans' homes up so that they can have the best possible leadership into the future. And I think this bill will do that by removing the need that the executive director be a veteran. It expands the drawing pool a little bit, and it ensures that we can get the best possible person qualified to lead the veterans' homes. If that's a veteran, great. That would be the preference. But if there's somebody that's very skilled and qualified and can take the veterans' homes into the future successfully, I think we owe that to our veterans to ensure we get the best person, whether it's a veteran or not. I don't think that should be the issue. We have some great medical centers in Minnesota. VA Medical Center is a great VA regional office. The leadership there oftentimes are not veterans, and they do a fabulous job. So I don't think we should have to just take a look at this position needing to be a veteran. Sure, they're going to serve veterans, but there's a long history of non-veterans doing an outstanding job of serving veterans. I think this just helps ensure that we can look for the best possible candidate to lead the veterans' homes in the future. So we're very supportive of this. I would say a majority of the veteran community has been. We work closely. There are a few people that have concerns. I know the VFW provided a letter, and I think we should hear from them and their concerns. But overwhelmingly, I think this is supported because people realize what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the best person to ensure that the homes are taken care of long into the future. With that, I'll take any questions.
All right. Questions from committee members? Okay. Well, let's go to the next testifier then.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dean Ashman. I serve on the Minnesota Veterans Home Board and also as the chair of the Special Review Committee. That committee was responsible, or is responsible at this time, to do a nationwide search for an executive director for the Minnesota Veterans Home. We initiated that with a recruiting firm that was very well known in the health community, and we kicked that effort off in late October of last year. And to make a long story short, we surfaced along with us about seven candidates exactly that felt had some qualifications to be the executive director of the Minnesota Veterans Home. After the SRC and the full board reviewed the applicants, we narrowed that down to three. We interviewed three candidates, and all three of those candidates, by the way, were veterans, as required. But to make a long story short, we came down to two, and then one removed himself from consideration for family personal reasons. Now, as we dealt with this recruiting firm since November, on a weekly basis, we heard from the firm that said, you know, we got some concerns here. The candidates are not surfacing as much as we thought there should be. There was a lot of documentation, a lot of information about our veterans' home, a lot of information about the position description, and so forth. But we were really disappointed in a number of candidates that surfaced. And as we met with this firm on a weekly basis in a teleconference, number one, the state of Minnesota was a concern because many of the people were from the South, many of the candidates that were a little reluctant to move to Minnesota. Second, the salary was a concern, but not a big concern. The biggest concern from the recruiting firm was that Minnesota had a requirement that the candidate be a veteran, and they advised us that that was a significant impact on a number of candidates. And as Deputy Commissioner McGracie said, we concluded that it would be in our best interest to pursue the idea of moving that requirement from the executive director to the chairman of the board. In addition, one of the other things that the Minnesota Veterans Home Board has been concerned about is the lack of a strong succession plan for our executive. And today, you may or may not know, but the administrators of the homes are not required to be a veteran. And what that does from a succession planning point of view is that the executive director and the Veterans Home Board, as they attempt to develop the administrators, as they should, to potentially move up to become the executive director by working in our agency and having a lot of familiarization with the local veterans and the veteran population, the veterans organizations, we were very constrained because we, at this point, I believe we only have one veteran that's an administrator in the five veterans' homes. So we really are at a loss to develop those people and to develop them to potentially become a candidate and maybe even the executive director. So I speak very strongly in favor of HF 1891. I feel, as Deputy Commissioner says, it's going to have a lot of upside benefits, and it'll help us be the best that we can be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments from members? All right, let's go to the next testifier.
Good morning. My name is Byron Opstead. I'm a board member for the Veterans Home Board. The Veterans Home Board really wants this change for the value of the organization in recruiting for the executive director position, which we've had, as Dean has said, we've had extreme difficulty recruiting. As far as myself as a veteran, I would prefer it to be a veteran. But I think reality has come to the point where it's necessary to open the door to non-veterans to serve in this position. The proposal, I just like to backtrack a little bit. I spent a career of 30 years in the VA hospital system, and in that period of time, I had several non-veteran medical center directors and also veteran hospital directors. I would say they were both, all of them did a good job as far as leading those hospitals. Initially, the proposal had the support of the UVLC, which is the United Veterans Legislative Council, and also the support of the CTF, the Commander's Task Force. However, there has been some change in that support, and we'll be listening to, we'd like to have a VFW representative air that issue.
Okay, before we do that, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this can go back to Dean. You're talking about some of the folks that you want to hire with the screening management that you used. What type of person were you looking for as far as leading the veterans? Maybe give us some idea.
Well, number one, we wanted someone that was very active in the executive ranks in a health facility. We focused a lot of the recruiting around VA medical facilities and veterans home facilities. In fact, many of the recruiting efforts involved calls from the recruiting company to executives in the VA medical centers as well as the veterans homes. But someone that has a lot of executive experience in overseeing a big facility, multiple homes, things like that had a lot of experience with the board. And the people we did surface had the experience that we thought we needed. The last two people that we actually interviewed with the full board, but significant executive experience primarily in the health industry. We were looking very closely at their experience with veterans organizations, their networking with veterans organizations, their experience with boards, as I said. But that was the primary criteria.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Cox, how do you go about, is this a nationwide search when you search for a candidate? And if you could also share, what is the salary for this position? And I'm just thinking about all the academy graduates that come through our academies, and many are in the medical profession and so forth. I'm just wondering, how do you go about doing your search?
Well, first of all, we contracted, as I said, a group called Depit Group, out of Illinois, Ohio. They have had a lot of experience, not only across the nation, but here in the metro area in recruiting healthcare executives. We did a lot of background research with that firm before we contracted them. They did the nationwide search. There's a couple of things that actually surfaced in the search that my prior experience with a large corporation with a lot of sensitivity to diversity, one of the things that we found in that search was not one female surfaced, not one, across the nation. There were over 30 candidates that expressed an interest, and then they were screened, a lot of them, by the Defit group, but not one female candidate surfaced. And in the veteran community, especially at the executive level, there's not a big population of females. That was one thing that the group told us. And secondly, a lot of the candidates had a concern, not a lot of them, but some of them, about the salary, especially if they came, there were three or four candidates from the state of California, and the salary level there was higher. But our salary, I believe, the top is about $105,000, I believe, is the cap.
Okay, anything further?
Well, thank you.
Okay. Representative
Mr. Chair, committee members, representative, it's very possible, too, that this salary is tied to the governor's salary ruling, and I haven't been able to get a firm answer on that. But many salaries within the state are based on the governor's salary, and it used to be 95%, and then I think it went to 105%, and then I think it might have even been increased again. But that may be tied there, and that's a hard door to open on some of these issues, because once you open that, then there's a pouring of other people that think they should make more than the governor. Whether they should or not, I don't know.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I see we have somebody else at the table who would like to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Williams, Vice Chair of the Veterans Home Board. And just to add on to what Director Addison said and Representative House, it is tied to the governor's salary, so that is a constraint that we have. And just additionally, with the type of person that we're looking for, the instructions to the Defit group, we're certainly looking for leadership. We're looking for people that have a track record and a passion for working for veterans. We're looking for people that have earned their stripes in the long-term care industry, that understands the impact of an agency that has governance by a board, but also oversight by the legislature, and a good relationship with veteran service organizations, and understands the value of maintaining a tremendous relationship with veteran service organizations, and the ability to lead the current administrators that we have. As Director Ashman said, we have one administrator that is happens to be a female administrator. She's the only veteran. She's a nurse from Vietnam. She's the administrator at Luverne. We have very capable people at the administrator level in all five of the homes. Obviously, we're going through some transition with the Minneapolis home. And so, in a broader sense, to support this bill and the value of this bill, it allows us to have an executive director that can work with the board of directors. There's a commission that's going to be formed, and it would be great to have an executive director that can work with this commission, work with legislators, and lead the agency at the agency office, as well as the administrators, to allow the administrators to do their job and keep the agency moving forward. And the language that exists today, also the ex officio members, it required veteran status, and so I think it was to clean that up that would again allow ex officio members from the House and the Senate to be non-veterans as well. And I just can't say enough about Senator Vickerman and Representative Tingelstad that were ex officio members, just outstanding advocates for veterans, and we appreciate that.
Representative Denton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Testifiers, have you solicited input from the veterans organizations, the VFW American Legions? Have you brought that concern to them to get their support, and so they really understand the dilemma that we are in getting a leadership, a leader in this leadership role?
Mr. Chair, representative members, we certainly have. We entered into that dialogue very early with the service organizations,
And as Mr. Opstead testified earlier, we do have the support of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and I believe their president, Jerry Kaiser, is here, so if he wanted to comment as well, they fully supported this. The Commander's Task Force, which is comprised of 9 of the congressionally chartered veterans organizations here in Minnesota, the Legion, the DAV, the Purple Heart, AMVETS, a few others, VFW, fully endorsed it as well. But recently the VFW is the only organization that has come forward now saying, well, we're not sure. We don't really support this now. So as I said earlier, overwhelmingly, I think we have a majority of the veterans that do support this. A couple of calls have come into our office over the past week expressing a little concern that we think if it's a veteran's home, it should be ran by a veteran. And I think overwhelmingly, we agree that would be great. That would be nice. But we don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot and say, okay, well, let's just go with this person because it's a veteran and we can't get the best person in there. And what we're really trying to do is open up the door so we can get the best person to take care of our veterans in the veterans' homes. Personally, and as an agency, it would be great to see a veteran in that position. But I want to see the best person there. We've had some issues recently, and I think we owe it to our veterans to have the best qualified person lead the department into the future. So overwhelmingly, I would say that we have the support of the veteran community. We've gotten a few calls recently, and the VFW now is not supportive, but overwhelmingly, I think they do.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that my question is pretty similar to what has been asked, but I guess I want to lead into the ranks of what you have now. Has there been any administration that's working in that capacity or someone from that administration coming forward to possibly be a candidate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, absolutely. One of the things that we are very fortunate to have, or one of the individuals, is Chip Cox, who happens to be here. Chip is the administrator from Hastings. But since August of last year, he has been serving as the interim executive director. He's done an outstanding job, has great credibility with the other administrators because they see one of their peers. He has tremendous credibility with the residents and the homes that we've seen him visit. Great credibility with the Veterans Service Organizations, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and he is earning his stripes here on the Hill, both in the House and Senate. He's a person that we would love to have been able to hire, you know, in this position. Unfortunately, while he has a heart as big as he is, and he's well over 6 feet, for veterans, he is not a veteran. And I mentioned Senator Vickerman, I mentioned Representative Tinglestad. His passion for veterans is parallel to theirs. But unfortunately, we cannot hire him in our current situation.
Okay. Anything further from members for the testifiers? See, Representative Hawes, I see on the list of testifiers you have Mr. Chip Cox on the list. Did you want him or anyone else to testify?
I think there's people in the audience that may want to wade into this, and I think they should wade into it. I mean, that's how good sausage is made, I think. You know, you put a lot of things into the mix, and we'll see what it looks like.
Okay, good. Thank you. Maybe somebody from the VFW would like to come up. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Al Lair. I reside at 910 Corey Lane in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I am the state legislative director for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I have not only myself, but the members of our organization had great concerns about the issue of allowing the executive director position of the Minnesota Veterans Home Board become filled or filled by a non-veteran. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the rationale, but I would just say this. Is this the first step in doing some things in the future that we may be very sorry about? What would be the next move if someone decided that the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs no longer needed to be a veteran? We have some deep concerns about that. And our organization has expressed that very sincerely. And it's hard for me to believe, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that in soliciting applications for this position, that you can't find a qualified medical person in the medical field who has the credentials of being a veteran. That just bothers me to no end. Because the thought occurs to me that there's no way we can find professional people who are veterans. And that's totally an error. And we would certainly feel very strongly about the fact that the position has had the services of a veteran executive director for all these years. I don't think it's the issue of the executive director being a veteran or a non-veteran. I think there are other issues that need to be addressed. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll respond to any questions you might have. I could spend a long time on this, but I know the committee's time is limited.
Well, thank you. Questions or comments from members? Representative Wolfhager.
Well, Chair, members, you know, here's the issue I have, I guess. I'm not a veteran. And I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee. So does that make me less? I'm pretty passionate. I have a son who's 21 years old. I care very deeply about what's happening in Iraq. But I'm not a veteran. So I don't know all the reasons why I was chosen to be on this committee, but it's an honor to be here. So if that's what's happened to me, and that's, you know, the situation where I sit, it's very difficult for me to vote against House File 1891. Because if I look at House File 1891 and I listen to your testimony, well, maybe I'm not worthy to be here myself. I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm struggling with. And you're alluding to some things, but I can't speculate. Unless you lay it on the table and tell me what your concern is, I can't speculate.
Well, Representative, I get the name, sir.
That's okay.
I certainly empathize with
you're
your...
You're better off without seeing the name.
Sorry, Al.
I certainly respect the fact that you're on this committee. We're very pleased that you are on the committee. But we veterans that have for many years been involved in establishing our rights and entitlements, we have some very deep concerns. Back in the 70s, right in this legislature, we ruined the Veterans Preference Act. Where veterans who now come back really do not have absolute preference in state government anymore. If you're 50% disabled, then you become a qualified member or applicant for veteran preference. So there's been a lot of changes that have concerned our organization. And I certainly feel that if we are an established veterans department, we ought to be able to have people administer that department who have the background as a veteran.
Okay, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, sir, you know, I am a veteran, still serving in the reserve. I have twin sons that are in the military. One is over in Iraq right now. And I'm very proud to be on this committee.
What is your biggest concern, if you would just put one concern regarding this bill?
Well,
your number one concern.
Representative, we have some concerns about this because the recruiting situation now has brought about the fact that maybe we need to change the requirement to have the status of veteran in your portfolio. I don't understand the reason for that. To me, it seems to me there are applicants out there who are qualified who do have veteran status. I can't believe that we don't have professional people out there that could serve in this position that do not have the credentials of being a veteran. That's hard for me to believe.
Thank you.
Anything further? Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the issue of the committee not having all veterans on it is different than your issue, because I think our committee needs to have non-veterans on it, because you need a non-veteran perspective. Your issue is, you're more worried, it sounds to me like, you're more fearful of the slippery slope where we start replacing other veteran positions with civilians. That's what I'm hearing you say. And maybe Mr. Williams can speak to this, but is it... Because I kind of agree with you. Why can't we find a veteran that's qualified to run a nursing home? On the other hand, I'm thinking it's for the vets. I want to make sure that they have the best administrator possible. And I don't care personally if that person's a veteran or not. If he or she's going to take care of the veterans, that's what's the most important thing. But maybe we can't find a qualified person who's also a vet because of the salary. Is that a constraint? And that it would take legislation to fix that. But maybe Mr. Williams can answer that. I don't know.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlaw, that is correct. And let me say, on behalf of the board and the entire agency, we certainly appreciate the relationship with the VFW and Commander Lehr very especially. And I can appreciate the concern for that slippery slope. This particular bill is not addressing the broader things of what happens with the Commissioner of Department of Veterans Affairs. It's not going back to issues that occurred in the 70s. What we did when we initiated this search, we made sure that the DFIT group posted the position not only on the Minnesota jobs website, but it went nationally. We instructed the DFIT group to search and deal with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So the national search, the appeal went out across the country, and it was a matter of respondents. And certainly, you know, myself, while I'm not a combat veteran, I am a Vietnam Air veteran, and I think the people are out there. However, if the people are not responding and the pool of respondents surfaced from the time we started to January, just a couple of candidates and one dropped out, we are clearly faced with salary and the veteran preference. And I just would like to add an addendum that Deputy Commissioner Puglisi mentioned. It is not, this bill does not say you will not allow a veteran to become executive director. In fact, we stress that our preference is to have a veteran. If we have someone that is, you know, head and shoulders above all the candidates that is not a veteran, we did not want that to preclude them. Certainly, if people are very close and there's a veteran, we would always go with a veteran. You know, the veterans are at the heart of what we do. It's the veterans' home. So the issue has been with the recruiting, the respondents, the pool of candidates, and the qualifications. Salary did play an issue.
Okay. Representative Dominguez.
I don't know who could answer this question, but was the opportunity for the VFWs and other American Legion, some of the other veterans groups, to participate in the first initial interview or looking at candidates? In other words, were they involved in the process in the beginning to give their voice of what they thought the search should look like?
Mr. Wade.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, the interview process that had not been opened up to the public until the finalists that we presented in the February board meeting. The dialogue with the veteran service organizations, the dialogue with the veteran service organizations of what we're looking at with the legislation, that has been ongoing. In fact, with the meetings with the UVLC and the Commander's Task Force, either I've been there representing the chair, Chip Cox has been there, and so that dialogue has been ongoing, and we did have support. The concerns, again, have just recently surfaced. The interview process, what we did is the Director Ashman is the chair of the Special Review Committee. We would meet, we would look through the resumes that have been presented. Some of those have been kicked out. Those that we brought in for an interview and the two that we brought in for finalists, we opened that up to the board in, again, the February board meeting. The interview took place after the board meeting, and that was the first opportunity. No, I stand corrected. At the February board meeting, Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, at the February board meeting, that was the first opportunity for the full board to see the two finalists. And so we went through that process since that time. So before getting public input, we had one candidate to drop out. And so now we're faced with one candidate.
Representative Dominguez.
I appreciate that information, but I guess I'm getting at the heart of was the organizations initially asked to take part in the beginning of the search, such as asking a commander or someone from those organizations to sit on the committee that was going to choose what candidate was going to be best to direct the organization.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, no, that was not done.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many, is there, what, nine members of the board?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, there are nine members of the board. However, the Special Review Committee consists of four members. It's a subcommittee. Director Ashman is the chair of that committee. I serve on that committee. Chairman Jeff Johnson serves on that committee. And Director Larry Greenberg is on that committee. We've had involvement and input, certainly from the agency standpoint, through Interim Director Cox and Administrator Burrows. The quality of the candidates and the type of people we were looking at, there have been informal dialogue with the veteran service organizations and others. But the Special Review Committee is a subcommittee.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And of those members and the interview committee and the board, how many of those are veterans?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, at this time we're very fortunate that all nine members of the Veterans Home Board of Directors are veterans.
And Mr. Chairman, is that a requirement to be on the board? You are to be a veteran.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, that is not a requirement that all nine members be a veteran. It just happens to be the case at this time.
Any follow up?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything for Anything to add, Mr. Lair? Okay, another testifier at the table. Welcome. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stephen O'Connor. I live in Spring Valley, Minnesota. And there's several things I'd like to bring up. First of all, I believe all committee members are in receipt of the letter presented by Commander Tate Doom. And one of the things that's pointed out in that letter, by statute, it starts in statute 196, I think it's .012, that the executive director holds the position of commissioner, deputy commissioner of Veterans Health Care. And it refers that directly back to the 198 statute that addresses the executive director. We have a strong feeling that when day-to-day dealings with veterans and veterans organizations are best done by veterans. That's why the requirement is for the Department of Veterans Affairs for the commissioner and the deputy commissioner to be veterans. Nobody works, I don't believe, works as well and understands as well and has as much empathy for veterans as other veterans on a day-to-day basis. And so we feel very strongly that if we're going to have a deputy commissioner for veterans' health care, that it certainly should be a veteran. One thing that I thought I heard in Mr. Williams' testimony and in Mr. Ashman's testimony is that a lot of this search for an executive director was aimed at the VA facilities and other state veterans homes, and I believe that narrows the search very much so. We have some competent veterans running health care facilities, and if you look at who's in the VA system and who's in other state veterans home systems, primarily, I'm sure that the search was broader than that, but if you target that area, you have limited the search as much as it the requirement of being a veteran. And I believe, at least I'm getting older and I can't remember things, I should have had somebody taking better notes for me, but, you know, Mr. Williams brought up, we did not, the meeting in February where they interviewed the two candidates was a closed meeting. I was there and was not allowed to stay. It was a closed meeting. So we have not had, as an organization, any input or any knowledge of the candidates or their qualifications and the like. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Anything, Representative Wolfslager?
Well, Chair and members, I think I heard earlier that Mr. Cox is not a veteran, yet he has served in the capacity or former capacity for Hastings. And I attended the hearing last week on the Minneapolis Veterans Home, and Mr. Cox was talked about, you know, in very favorable light, that at the Hastings facility they had not received violations, and that's one of the reasons why he moved forward to the Minneapolis home, because what we're dealing with at the Minneapolis home are deaths and violations in the healthcare system. So, I mean, what am I missing?
Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Chairman, the requirements and the responsibilities of a nursing home administrator that's over a facility are quite different than those of the executive director. The executive director is essentially a management position, not a direct care position. The administrator of the nursing home is in the trenches, and Mr. Cox does an excellent job. The requirement is not, there is no requirement for the nursing home administrator to be a veteran. And, you know, and Mr. Cox, in particular, does a very good job. It's the deputy commissioner's job that is the requirement, and they are essentially the agency head in absence of the board. The board is a part-time board. They meet when necessary and once a month. And in their absence, he or she is in charge. Does that help clarify at all, Representative?
Representative Olsbacher.
Is Mr. Cox one of the individuals we're talking about? If we adopt House File 1891 and it goes into law, would Mr. Cox become eligible for this position?
Mr. Williams maybe can answer that question.
I should clarify, maybe we're just using Mr. Cox as an example.
I was just using Mr. Chairman. I was just using him as an example. You brought his name forward. I hold him in high esteem.
Right.
So it was just an example.
Right.
All right, understood. Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative, and I will not do the name. Representative.
Right.
Mr. Cox, certainly he would be a person that we would love to look at. Because we have a current search underway, we'd either have to let that sunset, or if additional candidates surface and we proceed, that would certainly cue Mr. Cox up or anyone in the agency for a future round. If we don't find a candidate that is acceptable with veteran status, and we have to close that one and open up another one. Certainly I can't twist Mr. Cox's arm, but we'd like for all of the administrators or those that were interested to apply. And he has really done an outstanding job. Just a clarification, Mr. Cox is the administrator at Hastings, but he's serving as the interim executive director of the entire agency and testifying with the issues at Minneapolis. The Minneapolis home reports up to the agency, and while he's been serving as the interim executive director, he's been intricately involved in addressing the issues at Minneapolis. Fortunately for us, he also has 18 years experience working on the Minneapolis campus. And yes, he has done an outstanding, outstanding job.
Okay, anything further, Representative Wolfsberger? Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one other issue here, and it has to do with the House Research Bill summary that was passed out. Section 1, Paragraph 2, under current law, it is not required that the chair be a veteran. That's correct. And it is required that exactly 5 of the 9 board members must be health care delivery professionals. Thus, this provision allows for but does not guarantee an increase in the representation of both veterans and healthcare professionals on the board. That is blatantly incorrect, sir. There is a requirement in statute that the 3 public members have healthcare delivery experience and policy formation experience, as well as the 5 members that are veterans, that are veterans appointees.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Haas, would you accept an amendment where the entire board, and it is right now, all the board right now are all veterans, that all board members must be veterans, and that the selection committee that does the selection of the executive position are also veterans? Would you accept that as a verbal amendment?
We have some help me with this on clarity on it, and I would like some other people to speak to that. We have some people moving from this committee to that board, though, and I don't think you want to demand that they be veterans. You have representatives speaking up right now that are moving there. I'm not a veteran, and I've done an awful lot for veterans. Matter of fact, when Al Lehrer and I walk out of here today, we'll walk out as friends because we both have fought the battles together. I understand what you're saying, and the more we can do that, the better it is. I would just like to get some other testimony of what they're seeing, because a lot of the people have wisdom. While you're doing that, let me do another possible amendment. And maybe where we should take this is back to the table. Let me tell you how I think this system works. I think this is a very good ruling, or I wouldn't be carrying it. I looked at it and I said, I think this is very good because it's going to get the best service to the veterans that are in the beds. I mean, that's what you want to do here. However, when Al Air speaks, I recognize his wisdom. When he talks about veterans, I recognize he has a ton of wisdom, and I may be on the wrong side of the penny. So I always try to lean over and see what he's seeing. But secondly, I'll tell you, in this system, if he doesn't want this to happen, it probably will not happen. If this has resistance, it probably will not happen. Now we have responsibility to my dear friend. Because my side of the penny says, you better have the very best taking care of your veterans. You better have the very best taking care of your veterans. So now this poor man has to lean over and see my side of the penny. But if it has resistance, it's going to go away. If it was in the best interest of the veterans, what has just happened? One of the amendments that I was thinking of, and maybe this should be taken out to a table, before this moves to GovOps or wherever it goes, you should never select to hire a person from one. You should never be put in a position to have one person come in and make an application. Why even do an interview? Why would you do an interview? You don't have to interview. You've got what you got. I'm not even too sure it should be done out of two. Three usually is what you require. And if you don't have three, you send out and get more. Now, if you do this out and you allow people in and you have three veterans, you've got a group to choose from. If you don't have three veterans, then you fill it with non-veterans so you have a competitive group to choose from. And I guess if I was going to make an amendment, that's the type of amendment I would make. But again, we have to have consensus, because if we don't have consensus, this is going into the waste paper basket, because this is not Grandma's oatmeal. Grandma used to tell you with the oatmeal, eat it, because it's good for you. My friends are too old to be forced to eat oatmeal. So if we can't come to an agreement, we don't have a law. We don't have a bill. And what we're trying to do here is protect our veterans. So if we can come together to do that, that ought to be our moral and job description. And the answer is, can I have somebody give testimony here or response to Representative Dean?
Oh, by the way, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Detmer.
I still eat my oatmeal.
Well, I'm sure taking the lumps, and I don't have any.
But I have a couple prunes with it every morning.
So. We'll talk about that off the record.
Okay, thank you. Somebody must have something to say.
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted a few quick points I wanted to make, and then I would like Dan Williams to address the amendment.
All right, thank you.
The Holmes, current statute 196.021 does allow, and it says that the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Veterans Homes may appoint a deputy commissioner for health care. They have not chosen to do that. They do not have a deputy commissioner. They can. They haven't done that. They have an executive director. So I don't think what Mr. O'Connor was saying is very accurate. They can do that if they choose to. They haven't exercised that right. It's permissive. They don't have to. So I don't think that should come into play at all. There are some great points made about the administrators. They're not veterans. They're in the trenches. They're working with the veterans, doing the tough job. and they're doing a great job, an admirable job. If they can do that, and everybody supports that, then why would we think that they wouldn't be able to, as a non-veteran, manage the organization? I think we're turning this into, or we're trying to make this more of a veteran issue than it necessarily needs to be. Yes, these are veterans' homes, but these are long-term health care facilities. And this is an aging population, and this is a health care issue. And we're doing our best to ensure that we get the best person in there to oversee these homes, regardless if it's a veteran or not. I don't think that should be the main emphasis. We're trying to get the best people in there to take care of our veterans, you know, and our aging population. We want it to be a veteran, and it's in the language. We prefer that. But if that's not going to happen, then so be it. Let's get the best person in there to take care of our veterans. You know, I think we're twisting it a little bit, and we're getting away from what's really at the heart here, taking care of our aging population, and in this case, they happen to be veterans. If we can get a veteran in there, great. But if not, let's do what's right by them and get the best person in there. This language allows us, gives us the tools to do that. So I think we have to really stay focused on what's at the heart here. And I just want to share that.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, committee, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. That's exactly where we are. To the amendment that Representative Howes mentioned, mind you, we've not had a board meeting in the last couple of seconds here, so I'll go out on a limb and then the board can take me out to the back 40 and deal with me. But certainly the spirit of that amendment and what I think the ultimate outcome would be, I would have to think that the board would support that amendment, and here's why. As we've gone through the search process, and mind you, we did tell the DFID group to look at veterans' homes and other agencies, but it was much broader than that, so we also looked in the private sector. But because of the current requirement, a number of people were thrown out. Had we had the opportunity to look at non-veterans, perhaps we would have had a pool of three or maybe more that we could have selected from. And the approach that the board, the SRC took, Representative, is exactly what you said. We were not going to make a decision with one. And it was hard for us to say, well, we have two that we would bring forward. So, again, I may call on you to help me with the board, but I'll go out on a limb and say that that would be an amendment that the board would in my opinion, support. And by the way, the veterans' home are homes for veterans, but please bear in mind that we do have spouses of veterans there, so we do have some non-veterans in the home. But it is about long-term care.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hawes.
I sure hate to write law on the fly here. But I think what we should consider is having staff work with the VFWs and the agencies to try to compose an amendment that says we're going to do a national search and we're going to choose from three. And if we have three veterans, that's who we're going to choose from. If we don't have three veterans, then those positions can be filled with non-veterans. And I think by allowing this to be written and moving on with the next bill will allow time for debate between these agencies. But let me tell you again how this works, because I've been around politics for a long, long time. If, in fact, we don't come to an agreement, that's where that is. If it hurts the veteran, that was a wrong thing to do. If that hurts the veteran, it was a wrong thing to do. So let's put these people back at the table to discuss that amendment, and we'll move this bill forward to wherever you want. And if we can't come to an agreement, I will tell the governor, we can't come to an agreement. We're at a dispute. I'll tell the agency, we're at a dispute. This has to be pulled, because that's, in fact, it's going to get the guillotine anyway. So if we cannot come to a compromise in a position of putting the very best person into that job with the best for veterans' preference, we're at where we're at. Now, there is an old proverb, I don't know what I want, but I know I don't have it. we can do better than what we're doing, and we're going to seek compromise in order to get that done. So with that, I think I would like to renew my motion.
Representative Hawes.
I was going to run away now. Run away. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, we have a representative from the American Legion that I think we should hear from as well. And I just would like to just point out that the UVLC fully endorses this. That's comprised of many veteran organizations. The Commander's Task Force did fully support it, which was the 9 big congressionally chartered organizations the VFW pulled out. So, while I'm all about compromising and looking at things, this was something that was worked on for a while and looked at and discussed at length with the organizations. They still overwhelmingly support this. We have one organization that does not now, and I don't know that we need to yield, because there's one organization out of many that might not support this, and I haven't heard a good argument yet why this is not good to do. So I think before we start looking at that, we should at least understand, why is this not good? Everybody else agrees that this is a good thing to do. We're trying to get the best person in there. And, I know we all want to be on the same team, and, as people said, we'll leave here, we'll still all be friends. This is about doing the right thing for our veterans and the aging population in healthcare. And if there's just one organization that doesn't support it, I don't know that we need to back off. And that's all I wanted to say.
All right, thank you. We have another testifier at the table, another one standing in the side waiting here. So go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Lyle Foltz. I'm the state adjutant for the American Legion. I live in Apple Valley, Minnesota. I've worked for the American Legion for 21 years, and I had the privilege of being the department service officer for the Legion for about 7 years. And during that time, I attended the very first meeting of the Veterans Homes Board when General Steben was the chairman. And we had distinguished members on that board, a past national commander, Bob Hansen from the VFW, Steve O'Connor from the VFW. I attended every one of their Homes Board's meetings until about 1994. And I completely understand the difficulty of their job, the struggles they went through, and overall they've done a very good job. I'm speaking today. Our state commander could not be here. He's traveling, but the American Legion and our 104,000 members strongly believe that we need to do the best thing for veterans. We need to find the very best person we can find for this job, whether it's a veteran or not. A lot of the other testifiers have also commented that, yes, we would hope that it would be a veteran, but I truly believe that our veterans deserve the very best. Like I said, I attended all of the Homes Board's meetings for many years and completely understand the complexities and struggles that they've gone through. And the Minneapolis home is a terribly complex issue. We need the best person that we can find to manage the homes. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions from members for Mr. Fold? Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Gert, and I'm a resident of St. Louis Park. And I think it's important to look at the qualifications and revise them and remove barriers. If the requirement for a veteran for the executive director position is a barrier to employment, I think it's important to consider removing that, because about 10% of the population is veterans, and that means that the other 90% is not veterans, and you're therefore eliminating 90% of your potential people that could fill that position from the opportunity to be offered a position if they don't have that one particular requirement. And I don't know that the requirement to be a veteran is so paramount for that particular position, because there are other people in the organization that are military veterans. I'm a military veteran myself, and I don't know that you would consider me qualified for that particular position just because of my nature of being a veteran. I've been attending the Senate hearings on the Minnesota Veterans Homes for 13 months, and during that entire time, I think the executive director position has been vacant, and the nationwide search to fill that position has not resulted in it getting filled. And part of that, I think, is because the barrier for the requirement to be a veteran. So during that time, the Minneapolis home has been without their director, and 400 residents do not have the best care that they can have. And during that period, three of them died recently. That's almost a 1% mortality rate. That might be some impact from the quality of care that they're receiving. And I don't find that 1% mortality rate to be acceptable, and I don't know if anyone else does. And the governor commissioned a study at the cost of $75,000, and I don't know that the data that's been obtained from that study has done anything to improve the quality of care for the veterans. And I think that the money probably could have been better spent for the director's salary. I think that the study results were probably nothing that could not have been obtained by Representative Patty Fritz, who's an LPN, or Senator Sharon Ropes Erickson, who's an RN, walking through the facility and gaining from their observations. So I would like to support Representative Hawes in his legislation, and I think that making the change would be a good thing for the residents that live in Minnesota's veterans' homes to help fill that position. Thank you.
Questions or comments from members? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. I apologize for running in and out here. I had a bill up in another committee I had to get to, but just in the short exposure that I've had on this the discussion, I think that Commander Layer brought up a great point, and that is what we have experienced in the past has been a creep of veteran benefits from the 70s through the 80s through the 90s. And I think that's why you're seeing the huge reticence to move forward on this, because we have been used to being kind of put off to the side, or there's been a move to kind of undermine the benefits. I think we've been moving, hopefully, in the opposite direction in the last couple of years, reinstating some of those benefits. I know the veterans preference was something that we passed a couple of years ago in legislation. And I just wanted to speak to your concerns, Ms. Kerner, that the things that we're hearing are kind of a result of what has transpired over the last couple of decades. Those are concerns we need to take on board. But I also understand what you're saying, and I think one of the issues that we do when we tie particular executive positions like this to the governor's salary is we do limit our ability to access individuals on a national basis. And that's another policy that I think we need to visit, particularly since on superintendents of school districts, we often give them waivers to get above that. And by no means is this position any less important than that position. So I think those are some of the things that I think we're going to have to look at as we move down the road. But again, I think we put campus liaison reps on campuses and specifically made them veterans because they understand the plight of the veteran. They understand the things that the veteran goes through. And so it's not something that is just kind of a minor issue, as you understand, being a veteran. It's one of those things that oftentimes the only person that can relate to some of the instances that they go through is a veteran and a veteran. And so I don't know that there's any easy answer here. And I see Deputy Commissioner Puglisi has stepped up to the plate here. But I do thank Mr. Hawes for bringing, Representative Hawes for bringing this bill forward, and I think it does warrant significant discussion. I just wanted to address the issue of why there is some resistance here, because we have seen a creep in the last couple of decades, and that's why the resistance to this particular move.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Representative Severson, if you wanted a comfortable position, I would have been a shoe salesman. But what did you think of just, you know, you have to react so fast here that it always isn't the best way to make decisions. But what do you think of doing a national search and filling the position until you have three candidates? And if you have three veterans, then you choose from those three. And if you don't, you fill in from behind with qualified people. What would be your first reaction to that?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hawes, I think that's a good solution to bring to the table. I think that...
I do too, actually.
Yeah. And I think there are many things that could be considered in this. And I'm not sure if there was even brought up about compensation as the waiver as an issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, committee members, because the way I hear the issue is that you do not have qualified candidates. I mean, that's what I hear the issue. You can't fill that. If you could have three qualified veterans, you've got qualified candidates. If you have one, you do not have a field to choose from. So then you should have the right for the protection of the veterans to fill those other two positions with non-veterans. And I think there is some logic to that, so I think I will keep pushing that or call for an amendment and have them consider it. I do not know what my VFW friends have to say. Is that you liking that? You're not liking that. I got a shrug, which is a lot better than a...
Okay. Representative Severson, follow up.
Mr. Chair, no, I just wondered if the Deputy Commissioner had wanted to weigh in on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to point that too and just remind the members that the language also is going to ensure that the chair of the board would be a veteran, must be a veteran. And the way this current system is set up, the current structure, it's a governing board. The executive director reports to the board. They're his boss or her boss. So if the majority of the board members and the chair are veterans, we have veterans very much involved. And the executive director, if it is a non-veteran, reports to a majority of veterans. So I think we have a lot of veterans involved with the current structure and the current system. You know, the language is going to ensure the chair, who is in charge, is a veteran. And what we're doing is just saying the executive director may not have to be.
Okay. Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would beg to differ that the chairman is in charge. he answers to a majority. He or she answers to a majority vote. We have three members that are non-veterans. We need that diversity. We have a majority of members on the board that are veterans that can swing any vote, whether the chairman's in charge or not. As a final comment, I would just like to say that I believe, and not on purpose, sometimes the issue is getting clouded. We're talking about we need to provide the best health care for our veterans. And we do. The executive director's job in doing that is to hire the people that are administrators in those facilities that deliver that health care. Any failure in that health care at a particular facility is due to possibly lack of leadership of the executive director and the board, and mismanagement by those people that we put in charge. Having a healthcare background or being well-versed in healthcare as the executive director is not nearly as important as having the very best people in the trenches assuring that health care delivery. And those can be non-veterans. We're talking about somebody that's managing and that really interfaces on a day-to-day basis with the veterans community. And I would say that Commissioner Dyrick, Deputy Commissioner Puglisi, you know, what they have done in their department, they have put the very best people to administer best people to administer their programs. They don't do that on a daily basis. They interface with veterans, veterans organizations, the legislature, and that is the role of the executive director. They manage the people that are running their programs, but a failure in programs is a failure of the person that is actually administering that program. And I think we're getting confused here when we're talking about an executive director assuring good quality care. They do, but they do that by hiring the best qualified people that directly supervise the health care providers. With that, thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like the salary cap is a problem. How do we... I worked for a superintendent that was well overpaid. And so I know you can do it. You can waive the salary cap. How is that done? Does anybody know?
Mr. Chair.
Do we have to do legislation, or do we? How does that work?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Representative. It is in legislation, and recently the whole works went up. It used to be a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, it was like 95%. And now it's gone up to, I don't know, did it go to 106?
Well,
Representative.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what, how high it is, but what, I can't remember exactly what the governor's salary is right now. Do you, can you give
no,
me
I don't recall it, but I know it's based, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Representative.
Representative Tremba, it is based for a large part on a percent of the governor's salary. Now it exceeds that, so it's like 106% of that. But there's also exceptions, of course. I think county attorneys and the sheriff and I don't know if superintendent of schools, but some of those are exceptions. So you would have to change the law if you wanted this to be, and maybe that's something that we should be working on, and maybe that would really take care of the problem also.
Mr. Chair, members, also, you know, speaking of slippery slopes, I think if we do that for this position, I think one of the concerns is, okay, that there are other positions, too, where we would love to pay more to get more quality. You get what you pay for at times. And where do you draw the line then? If you start doing this with this one position, it opens the door for a lot of other positions out there that there are similar issues with.
Representative Beltramba.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really want to know what the governor makes, because I know what some of these rural long-term care facilities get. And so I do think, Representative Wardle, that maybe this is more of a money piece than a veteran piece, because there are probably really good veterans out there that, and a 400-bed facility is a far cry from a 120-bed long-term care, and I know what kind of money those positions are. And why would you go into a facility with 400 beds when you can make more at 220?
Representative Mr. Chair, I think it's a terribly I don't know if it's an underpaid position, but if I was in the business, I know I'd be making more money than they pay, than we pay. Because that, I mean, you'd go private and you're gonna double that salary, I suspect.
Mr. Chair, Representative Trump, too, I just want to remind you, we're talking about the overall leadership of the agency and not necessarily Minneapolis, which is a 400-bed. There's four other homes as well. You know, so they're not, they're involved with all five of the homes.
Thank you. Representative Wolfslager.
Chair members, Representative Haas, I think we're struggling here trying to do an amendment on the floor. So if you truly are thinking of that, I would be more in favor of tabling or doing, you know, trying another time versus trying to come up with an amendment, especially since it's 9:20.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would agree, but I just wanted to tell you before I travel with that, I'm going to have staff write that amendment, so the next time I present it, it's going to be at least an author's amendment. So I don't want to build that amendment here, the language for that amendment here. I don't think that's wise. But I think I want to get these people together and look at that. Because, again, the way this is traveling, if it has resistance, it's not going anywhere. And if we can have a compromise with that, it has a chance to live. So I will be proposing that just so that you have knowledge of that's what I'll be doing. And Mr. Chair, are you ready for me to ask to move this forward?
We have a couple more members, and then I think we need to go with it. Thank you. Representative Otremba.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, I was going to facilitate it by saying you can bring it to my committee and we can work out it at that point. So.
You must have had a really good employer when you were young, Representative.
I did.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of seeing this as not so much of a salary-based type of bill, but something that's brought to us because they want to open the door up. I think salaries, I don't see anything in here that says anything about a salary. I see the bill stating that it's just wanting to open up the doors to other folks to take part in the candidacy part of this. So I think we're leading ourselves into some other avenues here, which I don't necessarily like. I think that's a different bill. I think that's a different discussion as far as salaries. So I would hope that we can get back on track with this bill and decide if this is going to be opened up or is it not going to be opened up.
Okay, good. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. For this committee, I would like someone to give just a really short description of what the responsibilities of the executive director are, and then for the next committee, have something probably in writing available, because I think that's a part of the whole decision process.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to ask Interim Executive Director Chip Cox, who's been living this since August of last year, and obviously we've gone through a number of significant issues during that time. He can give you the best perspective, and then I won't have to go from what we have written. He can give you the real world. So, Mr. Chip Cox, our Interim Executive Director, if he would come, he can tell you in just a couple of minutes of what the Executive Director of the Minnesota Veterans Home Board entails.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Cox, and please identify yourself and who you represent for the record.
Good morning. My name is Charles Chip Cox. I am... have been since year 2000, the administrator of the Hastings Veterans Home. Have been serving as the interim executive director since August of last year. I appreciate the time the committee's taken to hear this bill. The executive director is a very complex position. As you've heard, it is charged with the responsibility of managing the 5 homes throughout the state of Minnesota. In those 5 homes, there's approximately 1,000 residents residing. The homes are in the corners of the state. There's one in Silver Bay, of course, one in Minneapolis, one in Hastings, one in Fergus Falls, and one in Laverne, Minnesota. To manage these facilities when they're out of state takes a a real trust in the people that you hire and put in charge of these facilities. The administrators must be very qualified health care providers. That is very true. The executive director needs to make sure that in these individual facilities that the care is of the highest standards. Set the standards, set the mark for the type of care that will be delivered to the veterans of the veterans' homes. Dealing with the veterans' organizations and dealing with the Hill and other things are a very important part of the executive director's position. Without veteran support, the veterans' homes are nothing. Let's be honest. And we do appreciate the support of the veterans' organizations on a daily basis. Whenever we need help from the veterans' organizations, they're there. And that's what makes the veterans' homes function. Healthcare is a very difficult occupation. It is a lot of regulations, a lot of rules, a lot of people looking over your shoulders. We have had some problems in our Minneapolis home. We're very much engaged in correcting those problems. The executive director needs to set the standard, needs to set the mark for the facilities to achieve. There's many parts to the executive director's job. It can be anywhere from going to a Service Organizations Convention and thanking them for the work they've done. They'll be in looking at how we deliver care. What standards are we going to set? What are the changes in health care? We got a whole new group of veterans coming into our facilities in the near future from the Iraqi War. When I started with the veterans organizations, most of the veterans in the homes were World War I and World War II. It's very rare to see a World War II veteran nowadays. We're seeing a lot more Korean. We're seeing a lot of Vietnam era and Vietnam veterans. They all have different needs. The homes need to continue to change to meet the needs of these veterans so that they get the care that they deserve. That is one of our challenges as we go forward, is, again, dealing with the new veteran from the Iraqi wars. To be the executive director, and Rich next to me was the executive director for many years at the Veterans Homes, did a very good job. He'll be able to tell you from his viewpoint what are some of the jobs of the executive director.
Okay.
But job one is to make sure that the residents are getting the highest quality care possible. Thank you. Any questions?
We're really running out of time here. If you want to identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the record. My name is Richard Zirk. I was the executive director of the Veterans Homes 1988 to 2000, during which time we didn't have problems. But the executive director position, which is what I understood you asked about very briefly, adequately captured by Chip's comments, really is about coordinating and overseeing what goes on. I'm not sure money's your issue. I think limiting your field might be a bigger issue. We never required a licensed administrator in that position. And frankly, it seems like the Mongrels got the job done better than the Greyhounds. That, in a nutshell, is behind a lot of the objection you're going to hear to this bill as it moves forward and until that's understood. Veteran or not veteran, I don't think matters as much as administrator or not administrator, how much you've limited or how much you've opened the field. It's a nasty job. It's a fish-bowl existence. Thank you.
Representative Hawes.
I would like to note that Chip Cox is not a veteran, but he was awarded a Medal of Courage from attending and taking questions at a Senate hearing the other day.
I suppose you wouldn't want me to ask to move this bill to the consent agenda. No, probably not. I would renew House File 1891, and I'd like to move it to Representative Otremba's committee.
Okay.
And I will work on that amendment and see if we can get consensus during that process.
Okay, we are out of time, but one final comment, Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Hawes, I see you have a real heart for the veteran, and I appreciate the work you're doing here. And one more comment, if you're a few years younger, I know a good recruiter that'd be at your doorstep tomorrow.
They did chase me around quite a bit, but I found a math and a science job to be teaching.
Okay, good. Representative Hawes renews his motion that House File 1891 be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Smooth.
The motion passes. The bill is approved. And I think that's it. I want to say thank you to everybody. This is our last meeting. Thank you, members, staff, also to anybody who has testified.
It's my favorite.
Yes. Thank you to all the veterans who have participated. Meeting adjourned.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. You've done an outstanding job. Chairing this